From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Well, you know things are up and down when Walmart decides to cut jobs, too. Wow, Walmart stores will cut 2,300 jobs, or roughly 2% of the total workforce at its Sam's Club retail warehouse chain. It's the biggest round of layoffs there since 2010. The action follows a lackluster U.S. holiday season, and layoffs announced earlier this month also come from retailers Macy's, JCPenney, and Target. U.S. stocks falling sharply, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average tumbling triple digits for a second session and posting its worst week since November of 2011. Investors pulling their money out from emerging markets and other assets viewed as risky. Well, Procter & Gamble has revealed its latest challenge to its earnings glory. This time, it's a facial issue. The U.S. consumer giant, fresh off a recent corner office shakeup and already facing a battle for market share in shampoo, said that second quarter earnings were marred, why? By the growing preference for men for mustaches and beards, which hit sales in its grooming segment. The prospect of genetically modified purple tomatoes reaching the shelves has now come a step closer. The dark pigment is intended to give tomatoes the same potential health benefits as fruit, such as blueberries. Developed in Britain, large-scale production is now underway in Canada, with the first 1,200 liters of purple tomato juice ready for shipping. Would you drink it? Here's a great story if you're into the Noah's Ark. It was a vast boat, of course, that saved two of each animal and a handful of humans from a catastrophic flood. But forget all of those images of a long vessel with a pointy bow. The original Noah's Ark, according to new research, was round. A recently deciphered 4,000-year-old clay tablet from modern-day Iraq, old ancient Mesopotamia, reveals striking new details about the roots of the Old Testament, the tale of Noah. It tells a similar story, complete with detailed instructions for building a giant round vessel, as well as key instructions that animals should enter two by two. The tablet went on display at the British Museum on Friday. Engineers will follow those instructions to see if this vessel could actually have sailed. It's also the subject of a new book, The Ark Before Noah. Lots of things going on in the skies these days, too. Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center.
Thank you, George. I always enjoy these programs. It's a great way to end a week and kick off the weekend. And that report about the Ark is particularly interesting. If it turns out that it's not only round but flattened and metallic looking, I am going to be alarmed.
Exactly. I was thinking the same thing, Peter.
I figured you were working on that one. I pledge to you, when I planned my appearance tonight, I was not going to talk about clusters of red and orange fireballs. That was my plan until the telephone started ringing about an hour ago, just to touch on a few apparently dramatic sightings that have occurred just tonight. Not 8 or 9 minutes ago, I got a call from a gentleman up in northern Maine at the Sugarloaf Ski Area, I think it is. He saw a cluster of red lights. I had to cut that conversation short, and I'm going to talk to him after my appearance tonight. That was probably 20 minutes ago, northern Maine. An hour ago, there was a sighting, very dramatic sighting in Kentucky between Louisville and Lexington, I think near Frankfort, Kentucky, on the interstate, Interstate 64, I think it is. Okay. Man and his girlfriend were driving along the highway towards the east, I believe. They saw a gigantic triangle hovering over the interstate with red and blue and white lights on it, all flashing in a very peculiar pattern. I just got the written report from him just before the program started. And not 2 hours ago, a woman and her husband were driving on Interstate 5, just north of Portland, probably not 30 or 40 miles north of Portland, near the city of Kelso, Washington. They saw about a dozen red lights moving directly above Interstate 5 going from east to west. There must be people listening to us right now who are driving on the highway and saw those objects. If they did, I would like to invite them to submit a written report using our online report form. What I was hoping to be able to talk about tonight was the four very dramatic electromagnetic interference cases that I've received since my last appearance on the 16th of January.
They keep rolling in, don't they?
They do. And I used to get maybe half a dozen of them a year. I've received four of them in the last 8 days. It's very unsettling to me, but Prescott and Prescott Valley, Arizona, probably the best example. Last Sunday, January 19th, I got a call from a very nice-sounding young woman. She's a young undergraduate in Prescott Valley. Called me up to say she'd seen a white light streaking from south to north across the sky in the northwestern sky from her vantage point. It suddenly slowed and came to a complete stop, she said. Then it suddenly accelerated at a blistering pace and shot off in a different direction. Well, I hadn't hung up the telephone more than 10 seconds before I got a second call. This one came from Prescott, about 13 miles west of Prescott Valley, I believe it is. A young man said that he had seen a white light come streaking in from the south. It stopped momentarily directly above him and then suddenly accelerated at a blistering pace and went shooting off, I think, to the northwest. The interesting thing about that case, George, is this young fellow said that he was listening to the radio when this occurred. Suddenly his radio stopped, and it started giving off the most peculiar metallic banging sounds that he's ever heard in his life. And it appears to be some kind of electromagnetic interference, either with the radio waves that he was receiving, or it might have been direct interference with his radio. Got a very similar report just 2 days ago from Marysville, California. That's about 30 or 40 miles north of Sacramento. Apparently, a bunch of people saw, just before sundown, a bunch of objects, probably up to 20 or 25 of them in the western sky. And a lot of people reported on their Facebook pages that their cell telephones would not work.
Wow.
So a lot is going on, and I really appreciate the opportunity to bring this information to the Coast to Coast listeners. I think it's very important, and it's happening now.
UFOCenter.com, that's Peter Davenport's National UFO Reporting Center's website. You can go to it quite often, as I do, to get the latest and breaking stories with UFOs. Up next, we're going to talk about evil spirits, exorcisms. Rick Collingwood joins us. We're going live down under in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Rick Collingwood, of course, is an internationally renowned hypnosis trainer, author, counselor, founder of the Mind Motivations and Australian Academy of Hypnosis. He is an expert in special disorders. We're going to talk with Rick tonight about evil spirits, hypnosis, and exorcisms. Rick, welcome back. It's been 3-4 years since you were last on the program.
Hi, George. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Me too. Now, let's talk a little bit more about what you do with hypnosis, first of all. An area that has always fascinated me. How did you get into that?
Look, I first began when I was 12. I read a hypnotic induction in the Spider-Man comic and tried it on my brother, and it worked. And from there, it became an interest until 1985 when I went into it professionally. And since that time, I've never looked back. But there's many different versions and variations of it, too. It's not all the same.
I've always heard that you cannot make someone under hypnosis do what they don't want to do. Is that true?
That's only if you're not a well-trained hypnotist.
I knew it.
Any stage hypnotist worth their salt knows that that's not true, but it's sort of profit out there by the academics. And if that's what they like to believe, then good luck to them. But no, it isn't true. About 20% of people you could make do anything. Right. When the MK Ultra mind control programs were on, George Estabrooks did a lot of experimentation with this and proved it, discredited that theory completely.
There are Manchurian candidates out there, I bet, Rick.
Oh, definitely. Without a doubt, there is. What they use them for, I don't know. I've never been down that road, but I would say undoubtedly there is, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about hypnosis and exorcisms. Have you come across anything like that where somebody was possessed or demonic?
Look, the first time it ever happened to me, so the answer to the question is yes. I'd been practicing for about 6 months, and I was very academic, using what was called Ericksonian hypnosis. And a little Irish girl came in with her mother and said to me, look, a spirit gets me and throws me on the ground and rapes me in my bed and was showing me these bruises and what have you. Yeah. And I thought, this is interesting. And so I said to her, how long since you came off your speed addiction? And she looked at her mother, and her mother said, I didn't tell him anything. And she had come off a speed addiction a year earlier. And I thought she had speed psychosis. So I put her into hypnosis. And in those days, we used to count people down from 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, mm-hmm. 4, 3, 2, 1. So as I'm counting her down, I get to 4, and I get this voice comes out of her that was not a young Irish girl that comes, I come from deeper than you can ever take her type. And I went, oh, my God, here we go. And the only reaction I could have, I said to her, well, aren't you brave getting into a little girl like this? Come on, throw some furniture around and do some vomiting and what have you. And she sort of bounced around in the chair a bit and made this growling sound. Then I saw a mist come out of her. And it went through the air conditioning slats for the depressurization in the clinic door. And that convinced me that I had to look at other alternatives of what's going on in the deeper states of mind. But it definitely wasn't this girl. So it went away. I saw her a few more times. And about a month later, it came back and started annoying her again. Then I found a spiritualist that I used to use for these types of things after that. It was a little bit too deep for me to handle. And he fixed her up, and it never came back. So there are some strange, unexplainable things happen with hypnosis or mesmerism that can't really be explained scientifically, you know?
And what is the difference between hypnosis and mesmerism?
Okay, hypnosis grew from mesmerism, which was brought into vogue by Franz Anton Mesmer, who was very discredited in the 1700s and 1800s. Mesmer never spoke when he induced a trance. He used energetic transference and what's known as hypnotic fascination, which is the look into my eyes type thing. And from then on, it sort of became very distorted after Mesmer was discredited. And in his time, there was a lot of mesmerists and magnetists around, such as Valentine Greatrakes and many others as well. And from there, it sort of became a verbal thing. There was a British doctor by the name of James Braid who went to see a magnetist called La Fontaine in Manchester in the 1700s to discredit him, and found that it worked. And La Fontaine taught Braid a lot of the magnetic techniques, but Braid was terrified of what the medical association would say. So he basically threw the baby up with the bathwater and said, oh, no, it's all about words and relaxation and a focus of imagination and concentration. But with mesmerism, there was no speaking done. So there was a Scottish surgeon by the name of James Esdale who went off to India to work in the hospitals there. And he used Mesmer's exact no-word methods. And he did 117 documented limb amputations using mesmerism with no speaking and had great success with it. And he had a 5% mortality and post-infection rate when the usual going rate was about 50%. And when the medical people said to him, this is all in the imagination, his answer, he was brave enough, he said to his association, well, all the imagination in the world won't stop the gushing of blood and the screaming of pain when I remove a diseased limb with a saw. So there was something obviously in it. But it got disempowered down to words, and a lot of what is hypnosis now would be better off described as relaxation therapy. It doesn't get down into the deep, true hypnotic state.
I'm sure in your career, Rick, you've come across some really bizarre cases, haven't you?
I have indeed, yes.
Beyond the one you just mentioned, what are some of the others?
I worked with a young girl once who came in to see me, who'd been having seizures for a long, long time. And they'd started, she had had a baby, and the baby was about 4 months old, and she put the baby down to bed, and she went and made herself a toasted sandwich, and the baby began to cry again. So she went to settle the baby and came back, and she picked the sandwich up and took a bite and had a seizure because the toasted sandwich, the cheese was bubbling. And from that day on, she started having 4 or 5 seizures a week. And she had every known medical treatment in the world to do with this. And we tried everything, and we could minimize them down a little bit. And then I read Brian Weiss had written a book called Many Lives, Many Masters about past life regressions. And I'd never done one. This was in the early days. And I said, would you like to try it? And she said, sure. So we gave her this past life regression. And she found herself in ancient Rome, she said, walking down the seventh hill with her brother, and she was a beggar. And I said to her, go ahead to the last day of that life. And so she's chatting away in a quiet voice, and she goes, oh. And I said, what happened? And she said, some bandits were chasing us, and I fell off a cliff.
Huh.
And I said, where are you now? And she said, I'm floating in all these colors. But the end of the bottom line was, from that day until this, she never had another seizure again, and yet we didn't talk about these seizures while she was having this experience or before it. It was just something unique to try. But what was interesting, her partner was in a motorcycle gang here. This was in Queensland. His name was Ivan, and he was about 6'5". I called him Ivan the Terrible, and he came in one day, and she was a little girl, and he said to me, mate, I could pick you up with one finger. And I said, yeah, well, why would you want to? And he said, I don't, but I've got something weird to tell you. And I said, what's that? He said, when she has these seizures, he said, if I put my hands underneath her, I can't lift her off the bed. So something weird's going on here because I'm a strong man. So there's definitely influences out there that can affect us physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Oh, there's no question. There's something there.
It was strange with the hypnosis. I was very academic. I learned not to be. I broke out of the model that they call Ericksonian hypnosis and went back to the traditionalism. Then when I started to learn mesmerism, which is all basically in Europe, is over there they don't do the verbal hypnosis. They use more mesmerism. But after that, I began to study mesmer. I've been a scholar of mesmer for 10 years now. A lot of strange things began to happen, which are quite extraordinary. And you know, a lot of it you don't sort of talk about because people would think you were half mad, but that doesn't discount the fact that certain things happen. And you just have to go with the flow, if you will, on them and think, well, to me now I call it unexplained science.
And these are real things, too. These things are happening, yeah.
Look, I'll tell you, I had a very strange experience. I used to do a lot of cancer work in Europe. And I also visit Mesmer's grave in Meersburg in Germany every year. So I was doing some cancer work. I was in Switzerland in a town called Lausanne, staying in this very nice old hotel, and I'd been working for 10 days, and I said to the fellow that had taken me over there, I'm going to Germany tomorrow. I'm going to drive over there because it's a six-hour drive, and I'm going to visit Mesmer's grave. So off I went, and I took an American doctor with me as well, and we went and visited the grave, and we came home that night back to the hotel, and I woke up, and it was exactly 2 a.m, and there's this figure standing at the end of my bed in a black coat with this nice smile just nodding, and I thought, this is an interesting dream. And then I thought, no, but I'm not dreaming, and this figure's just smiling at me, and I thought, I'll turn the lamp on its side, and if I wake up in the morning and the lamp's on its side, then obviously it was real. If it's not, it was was an amazing lucid dream. So did that, looked up, the figure's gone, went back to sleep, woke up at 8:30 in the morning, and there was the lamp on the bedside table on its side. So it's just, I call it weird stuff. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't bother me or worry me. It's just the way it is.
Rick, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back and talk more with you about exorcisms and hypnosis. Rick Collingwood, our special guest tonight. His website, mindmotivations.com. He's also got a CD series out there called Life Improvement, which is pretty darn fascinating. I know watching so many different cases of hypnotism, to see some of these people go through this change, this metamorphosis, truly unbelievable. And we've got the real deal with us tonight, Rick Collingwood. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Rick Collingwood with us. Rick, are there certain people who are more susceptible to being possessed or having these demons attack them?
Look, I think the reality of that is a lot of people that have been through some extreme traumas in their very young age, or people that have been really involved in drugs. I think that's a lot of the chemical drugs open up conduits, if you will, in the brain, or receptors that enable these other energies to come through and attach themselves to certain individuals. I can put a person into hypnosis, and once they're down in a deep state, it can be asked if there's anybody else there. And often you'll get a yes, and you'll get a strange name. It's a bit like a past life regression. And the interesting thing is that these attached entities will often leave. They'll be quite happy to leave and to leave the person alone. And then some very significant and fast changes will happen for them. So, but I don't think that all of these energies that attach themselves to people are necessarily evil spirits either. I think there's a lot going on in the unseen world that we're not aware of, and some of these energies just like to come and ground themselves through someone else. But also you'll see a person often that has unknown skin conditions and sores, or starts talking in strange voices for no apparent reason. And psychiatry can't figure it out, then you just have to be open-minded with it. You know, it's I'm not an expert on the paranormal by any means, but I've certainly seen a lot of it in my career with hypnosis. And the other thing is, these things tend to attach themselves to you once they know that you can sense them, see them, or feel them. So, like in my office, quite often hypnotizing people, a light will float through or whatever. I just tend to ignore it now. I don't buy into it emotionally. I don't think that anything can do any harm to you until you become frightened of it, and then you lose your own rationality, you know?
Can you shield yourself from these unwanted entities that bombard you?
I think, look, they say that you should surround yourself with white light. And I was talking to one of the NSA remote viewers once, who was I became rather a good friend of mine, and he laughed and he said, you know, the white light, he said, there's frequencies out there in other dimensions, that's what he called them, who will seek out a white light like a beacon. He said, the common sense is to fill yourself with a light that's the purest substance in the universe, which is gold. So if I feel I need a little bit of protection, or want to get a deep night's sleep, I will lay down and imagine I'm breathing gold into myself, and I find that works very, very well. Having said that, I think there's probably also some very significant, powerful negative entities out there as well that even gold light isn't going to help them, and this is where you need a person very well experienced in exorcisms to make a shift, you know?
Well, that's a good point too. Now, under the influence of hypnosis, have you seen people go through an incredible change, a metamorphosis?
Oh, countless times. The hypnosis works basically with patterns in the mind. If you will, your subconscious, which is pretty much limitless, it's like the hard drive of a computer. Whatever program has been put in there by repetition or a shock emotion will stay there. And that hard drive is controlling 60 to 70 trillion cells in the body. Each one of them is doing a few things a second. Our conscious mind, if you will, is like the screen of the computer. It can do 5 or 6 things a second, and it can only do what's in the hard drive. So the easy way to get in and to shift a pattern with someone is to get them into the proper hypnotic state and basically put a program in, which can be done by direct suggestion or using some metaphors and encouragement, and then get an agreement from the subconscious mind and treat it with respect. Doing it that way, once you get the subconscious to agree to do something, it will change the program without a problem, and it will enable a person to maximize their own potentials. For example, I worked with a lot of race car drivers, and I could speed them up. And they would go from being also rans to quite often winning. But I could hypnotize a person that had never been in a race car, and I could say to them, you're a race car driver, but because they had no experience to enhance upon, they'd probably crash on the first corner. So you can really enhance any capability that a person has and just maximize their abilities.
Rick, when you go through all of this, and the people who come to you, what are they looking for? What do they want?
Look, you get everything from quitting smoking to changing eating patterns to stress to panic attacks to grief release, anything that is the human condition. I spend most of my time training now, so if somebody calls me up and they want to quit smoking, I'll refer them off. But I've just finished working with a young chap that had some very debilitating OCD. He couldn't leave his home. He would spit at his mother and punch holes in walls, had to wear gloves everywhere, could only eat pasta, no other food. And we had five sessions, and he came in to see me yesterday and had just been on a train into university to the campus by himself and sat through a lecture and gone home. And now he wears one little part of these rubber gloves that doctors wear on his index fingers only. And basically normalized, for lack of a better term. But I don't know what the cause was for that, nor does he. I don't go looking for the cause. I sort of more encourage the subconscious mind to move beyond the cause. And I use the same sort of treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder with soldiers that are coming back from the war zones. So they remember everything, but they don't have the PTSD and the great depression and guilt that goes with it anymore.
What have you concluded, Rick, at this point, that is going on with the individual, their mind? Is it something physical? Is it something supernatural? What is it?
I would say both. Look, they've found, if you go to the Stanford Research Center and have a look, the Cognitive Sciences Laboratory, they've found we've got billions and billions of receptors all over us that most people, for example, in the mucous membranes of both nasal passages, there's 250,000 receptors that will smell other people's emotions and intentions. But if you don't know you've got them, you can't use them. We also have an enteric brain, which is our instincts, like the animals have, but we're not taught to use it, so we're not told that we have it. So things are just hunches, whereas intuition and what have you is quite real. It's just often taken out of perspective, but by the same token, we have to live in the real world and be organized and responsible. So, but we're all taught that everything should be logical and we should follow a certain process to get a certain result. But that often ignores the heart. And, you know, the heart can think as well, and it knows that the energy field coming out from the heart is far stronger than what comes from the brain. Now, when I began to get involved with mesmerism, and I call it energetic hypnosis, you can affect people very easily from a distance.
Sure.
It's nothing new at all. And I think sometimes other energies slip in with this and can begin to have their influences as well.
What has been one of the most dramatic changes you've seen, Rick, with someone who comes in for hypnosis, whether they've been possessed or they just need something done? Has it been dramatic, a specific change in someone?
Okay, the most specific change, I don't know what the law is in the U.S. about talking about this, is probably remissions of cancers. To me, that's dramatic. The other thing is auditory schizophrenia, turning that down and turning the volume off or making the voices go away. That can be done quite commonly. I will say that none of this have I ever done without people's permission from their doctors. You know, you need to be sensible with this and regulate it. And as I teach my students, if you get a miraculous cure, it can miraculously unwind itself as well. So nothing is ever completely said and done. You know, we live our lives and we're comfortable and happy. If we have a traumatic event, it will throw us out of gear very, very easily, and it will create all sorts of emotional repercussions that can very quickly turn us into a completely different person. So using hypnosis and or mesmerism, you can bring people back to the state that they were at before quite easily. It certainly works a lot more significantly and more quickly than taking a medication or sitting in counseling for months and months and months, making some psychologist very wealthy, you know?
Do you ever do hypnosis on children or younger people?
With their parents, I will, yeah. After about the age of 7 or 8, it's very, very effective because kids have got a fantastic imagination.
Yeah.
And will look, it's used for bedwetting and behavioral disorders that we can't just lob down as ADD, if you will. And a lot of it is encouragement. Most children that I've found that are really distorted in their behavior or their views, for example, I call ADD absent dad or absent discipline disorder, which significantly it is. And that really puts a child into complete emotional disarray when the mother or father leaves and the child feels abandoned and they really don't get diagnosed with the depression that they have and they get a prescription thrown at them. And it's not always the best way, but I've got a whole series of MP3s for children on the website. But they're called sleep stories, so they're not like adult hypnosis, but they have a very, very, there's some very interesting testimonials come back from them. That's probably the best way to put it.
Have you ever hypnotized a younger person who sees entities or talks to them? And the parent is concerned, and you pull that out of them.
Quite often, the children with nightmares and what have you. I think, look, it's interesting. Young children can begin to tell you all sorts of strange and weird things. That I have a 7-year-old son. I'll give you a personal example. He would my partner's mother had died maybe 15 years ago, and her name was Laurie, and little Daniel would go upstairs and he'd play in his room, and sometimes you'd hear him out of a bit of a chit-chat and you'd think that's just a boy playing with his toys. And he came downstairs one afternoon and he walks up to my wife and he said, "Mummy, who's Laurie?" And my wife looked and said, "What?" He said, "Who's Laurie?" And she said to him, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Oh, the lady that comes and visits me and plays with me." So I think children, before they get this hammered out of them, often in many cases, they're not as judgmental as us, and they haven't been shut down. So they will see things and experience things and thoughts and feelings that adults have had closed out of them, if you will. It's very easy to change your mind and adamantly stick your feet in the ground and go, "No, nothing is real except what I can see." But that's not the truth. So children's, when their behavior distorts, there's often something external going on, I believe.
Rick Collingwood is with us. Mind Motivations, his website, Life Improvement Series, CD series as well. Rick, the occult practices, do they utilize hypnosis, those who practice the occult?
I would have to say maybe energetic hypnosis. Look, I can say this. I know from my studies of mesmer. Mesmer used to associate a lot with Cagliostro and also Saint Germain. Back in the 1700s, where mesmer lived in the Landstrasse in Vienna, it was a huge Rosicrucian area. And they used to engage in these practices a lot. In Meersburg, where his monument is with his grave, it's a three-sided monument. On one side of it, it has the eternal flame. On the other side, it has the all-seeing eye. And on the third face, it has a map of the solar system as it was known at that time, as it does on the top as well. So there was very strong links into the occult with this. In the early days, mesmer had great influence on many, many people, and they started what was called the Society of Harmonies with the 27 propositions of magnetism, and somebody let it out in the end. Now, the interesting thing is that it's supposed in academic literature that the Society of Harmonies was all shut down by mesmer and doesn't exist anymore, but it's not true because I've been to it. It still does exist, but it tends to find you. You don't find it. And it's in Nice in France, and it's still quite real, and it's been going on since mesmer passed away in 1815. and it's still there. Now, there's some very interesting things happen inside that magnetic lodge that would defy logical thinking. But, you know, flying a jumbo jet to me defies logical thinking as well. It doesn't mean it can't be done. It just means I don't know how to. So there are very, very strong occult ties with this, but more so with mesmerism than with hypnosis. I know that hypnosis is used in rituals. I think personally many of these Christian ministers that are healing people where they do that bang on the forehead, healed by the power of the Lord, that's actually a hypnotic induction. So whether it be the Lord or whether it be some other energetic transference, I don't know, but there's thousands of documented cases of people having spontaneous remissions from all sorts of things by that happening, just as there is with possessions as well. You know, people that are go along to the exorcist that are possessed, it would be foolish for anyone to just say there's no such thing as a possession, because there's too much evidence out there to show that there is.
Are they rare?
Possessions?
Yeah.
I think some demonic possession that takes a person over completely is quite rare and will usually happen with taking too many of the incorrect substances or drinking too much. I think some entities can attach themselves to people. But at the end of the day, when you look at a lot of the old scriptings, they'll say things like, for example, when we are in love, we're not in love, it is the energy of love that loves through us. When we're angry, when we hate, when we whatever, it's external energies channeling through us. Now, you know, they've shown now that the brain is considerably like a radio receptor. But they've still never absolutely proven that we think with the brain. You know, it's obvious the brain plays a significant part in thinking. But I think it also tunes into other frequencies and energies and forces that are out there. Having said that, I'd like to consider myself as a logical person who's organized and keeps their feet on the ground as well. But I'm open-minded enough from what I've seen to understand that there's things out there we have no awareness of. And it's interesting, once I got into the mesmerism, a lot of this began to happen more and more. And it was a forgotten process that I've spent a long time restudying, being to Europe and met the old mesmerists. And it's something that anybody can learn, but finding the correct information to learn it is the difficult bit. On my site, there's a complete mesmerism course with 16 DVDs that I've filmed in training with 16 of the old books that are relevant. And, you know, even my students learn it. They see the results they get and they scratch their own heads. But when you see that, you can't deny it. You know, it's a lot of mesmerism, for example, the look into my eyes is part of the hypnotic fascination. I believe that the church has brought us up telling us it's rude to look into people's eyes just to disempower us. So there's some good science behind it now. You know, up until 2 years ago, we weren't allowed to say that any force could come out of the eyes, but now they're inventing switches that you can look at that will pick up the shift of frequency in your eyes and you can think and turn a light on. So there's some very, very interesting things happening, you know.
Do you find that you could be in some dangerous position by trying to get rid of a demon with hypnosis, that you yourself could get attacked?
No, my position with it is that it would only be dangerous if I allowed the fear to overcome me. These things don't particularly bother me. I find them interesting. Look, I'll give you another example. I was in London staying in an old hotel, a modern hotel on the Thames River. I won't mention the chain.
Let's get right into that when we come back, this modern hotel, and see what happens. We're going to take phone calls as well. Rick Collingwood with us. Hypnosis, exorcisms, and demons.